Hello and welcome to the Learning and Development Podcast, a podcast that explores L&D that works with those who are making it work. In this episode, I'm speaking with Laura Paramore to discuss using data for L&D impact. But before we get into it, if you're enjoying this podcast, please do take the time to give us a 5-star rating on your podcast app of choice to help others to find us, and thank you if you've done so already. Now, let's get into it. Laura, welcome back to the Learning and Development Podcast.
Thanks, David. I'm excited to be here. It's always nice to talk with you.
Likewise, Laura. Now, data has been a hot topic in L&D for some time, and you're seeing signs of real growth in this area. So maybe we should start there.
Yeah. Data is everywhere. Data is like, you can't escape data these days. And so L&D has been almost, it's almost one of the last departments to really get into data, but I'm certainly seeing some growth in there. We're starting to focus on metrics and information that everyone uses in businesses, which is always a good positive sign.
I remember reading quite some time ago, I'm digging myself a hole here because I can't remember what the source is, but we're going back about 4 or 5 years, and you mentioned that learning and development are one of the last, but in this paper I remember reading, it was acknowledged that L&D is one of the last, but the reason is because we thought we were one of the first with what we traditionally call learning metrics. On behalf of the listener, I can't let a statement like that go without acknowledging it. You mentioned there that you think we're one of the last. Why do you think that?
We could talk about terms, right? Hmm. So, data is information, right? Mm-hmm. And data's changed. It's the way we view data has changed over the years with the internet and all of those things, right? Mm-hmm. But when I say we're one of the last, we've always been able to give information on how many courses we do, how many people attend our courses. Our LMSs gave us a lot of data, right? Mm-hmm. But many times when, if you look at across all other departments, they've been getting more and more refined in the information that they can provide to the organization. So if you wrap all that up, David, that's business intelligence. Mm. So we could always give data on activities and things that we've been doing, but that's not really the data that businesses need in order to make decisions and flourish, right? Mm. So when I'm talking about data, and honestly, in order for us to have data, we have to understand our own work, right? Yeah. So L&D people, God love us, right? We are out there cranking out those courses, but how much do we really understand about what our impact is? Mm. I think when I talk about them being the last, that is hand in hand with we're being the last to measure ourselves.
Mm. I think that the way I've heard it described before, Laura, is that we've always sought rear view mirror data. It's almost like, where have we been? But I think the conversation changed with big data, because big data is a great big where are we? And I think that if we're looking always in the rear view mirror, then I wonder to what extent we are, we fully understand where we should be. And the stuff we should be looking at. And I think that, so big data perhaps was a conversation with 10, 15 years ago, and probably had us look at ourselves in learning and development, where we may have believed that we've been data savvy before, albeit in the rearview mirror. And of course, with more advances and perhaps even scandals as far as the use of our data is concerned, as you've said, it's ubiquitous. It informs so much of our daily lives, and yet here we are still having conversations around what data should and could be in learning and development. I wonder what you see as some of the main triggers for growth in this area, especially in data for learning and development.
Well, good question. So we just kind of covered our history of providing information on our activities that we're doing and opinions about how we're doing, looking in the rearview mirror. But then our leaders were saying, that's not enough. We need to know how you help the business. And so then what our industry started doing was saying, okay, let me show you the metrics. So then they got into the metric game, and that's data too, right? So then we went in and said, okay, here are all the metrics we believe that we're influencing. And that has, that's kind of where we sit now. We want, people are going in and identifying metrics. And then that age old question comes up, because you know, when you look at all the information out there, the age old question is, how do you know you influence that metric? Right. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today, hopefully. But that's the point. The point is we got into the game with thinking we had data, the rear view, like you said. And then they said, oh, wait a minute. The business are saying, wait a minute. Everybody else is using these metrics in the organization. You should be using the metrics in the organization. So then we rushed to say, OK, yes, let's identify which ones we're doing. But what we did was we totally skipped over how we impact those metrics. So the core of our work is what we missed over as far as data goes. But right now, people are in going in and saying, let's look at the metrics and let me make a story. Most of the time it's, let me tell a story about how we influence and how everybody says we did whatever. Well, that's going to hold us for only so long, right?
Yeah.
Eventually somebody's going to say, where's the empirical data? Where's the quantifiable data, you know, that actually says you did this? Because retention, you know. We just had a customer was saying, well, we want to redo this course because we want to have better retention. We're losing people. I said, that's wonderful. That's great. And they said, well, listen, we're doing like e-learning. Should we go and continue to do e-learning? And those are the questions L&D people are thinking about. Oh, should I continue with the e-learning? Should I go back to the classroom? Those kind of like process things. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. First thing we need to do is find out what they're actually getting from this course, the course that we currently have, regardless of the medium. What are we getting out of it? If we're not able to change skills in those courses, then that's our problem. It's not whether our medium is correct. So we kind of distracted, even though we've gotten into the data game, we're talking about metrics and kind of high, like that broad stroke brush. We've done that, but we haven't, we don't really have information on what's working and what's not working in our industry. We're just saying we can show evidence that something's changing.
And I think that part of the problem is highlighted from what you've just said there, Laura, and I think that that many in learning and development will see their role as providing learning. And so if your role, if you see your job as providing learning, then the metrics that immediately emanate from that are who took that training, who stayed to the end, who liked it, and who'd recommend it to a colleague. I mean, and that is the whole essence of providing learning. But I know that you and I share belief from our previous conversations that learning and development should aspire to being more than simply making stuff available. And so I'd love to know, to get into the nuts and bolts of this with you, Laura, and ask, what data should we be looking for and using? And on the flip side, what might be classed as the wrong data?
Okay. First of all, I love the way you said that. We see ourselves as delivering courses. That's what we do, which is, again, crazy. Because then on one hand, we say we deliver courses. And on the other hand, we want a seat at the table. We want to have discussions about what we deliver. Well, we can't have it both. We have to either view ourselves as business, as part of the business and making the business happen, or we view ourselves as delivering courses. Those are two very different things. So the wrong data, we've been talking a lot about that. If you consider our reputation, which, you know, we all fight against, right? We want to have that seat at the table, but the data that we're providing to show our value is about the activities that we're doing and the courses that we're delivering. So our value, the data that we provide, really informs everyone else on our value. Because we're giving them the courses that, and whether people like us, then they want us to entertain people and they want us to have courses. That's the data we're providing them. And they're saying, great. Right. So we said, okay, we want to change that reputation. We're going to start giving metrics and showing metrics, but nobody believes us. Right. Okay. So you say that you're part of these metrics. Well, show me how. Well, I did these courses and these metrics changed. No, show me how, not that these two things happened. So the right kind of data. The good news in all of this discussion is the right kind of data is here at our fingertips if we just do our jobs better.
Yeah.
Okay. So the right kind of data is, let's think about what we want our reputation to be, what we want, where is our skill set? What is it that we want to be known for? Well, I would submit that we want to be known for the people that can create capability in an organization. We create skills in people. and they go and they use those on those skills on the job, and then the job changes and then the metrics change. That's the way it works, right? There's no way getting around that. That's just the way it works. We've totally skipped the fact that we create skills. So the data that we need is, what skills are we adding to the organization? And if those skills are being able to be used in the organization to actually make changes, I know we talked about this last time. Some people want to say, well, our job is just to make the skill. And yes, we definitely have to give data on whether we make the skill. But in addition, we're the only department in the organization that is tasked with creating capability and enabling us to do something. So the second step of that is, can we get our organizations to assimilate those skills and then change those metrics? So we have to do both of those things. So the data that we need is really baked into our intent and into our design. So that's what we need. We need data on skills, whether we are working on the right ones, whether we're able to produce them, and whether those skills get transferred to the job. That's the data that we need.
Yeah, great. And I think what's so important about that, and I've mentioned it on previous episodes as well, is that that's the language of our business leaders now. There are skills shortages or skills gaps that aren't just being experienced in our organizations. They're being felt hard across entire industries, and they're holding back economies. So business, that is the front of business leaders' minds. That they're talking and thinking in the other way around, thinking and talking in terms of the skills that they actually need. And I think that this is a great opportunity for us not to impose our own language in the way that we've done previously, and whether this is our HR directors that have said that we need these sets of competencies or behaviors or capabilities in the past. We're talking skills, so we align ourselves and we make sure that we work across alongside our HR peers in workforce planning, in recruitment or talent acquisition, in talent management and development, and even compensation and benefits, so that we understand what those high quality or high value skills are, and that we are shoring up our own organizations and the teams within those organizations, as well as providing career opportunities for those inside our organizations. That, and when I say this, I always got daggers attached to it as well. When we hire internally, we have the potential to have people who understand our culture. But when we hire externally and we choose a candidate externally rather than internally, I wonder to what extent we're both valuing the cultural know-how, and whether we're actually developing people to enrich a deeper talent pool as a result. Now there's a whole load in there, but it's a short way of saying that this is the zeitgeist, isn't it, Laura? This is our moment, because our leaders are laser focused and want this problem solved.
Absolutely, well said. So I'm going to pack just a little bit of that, and I'll say it just in another way. Just as you said, there's two ways for a company to gain skills. It's either hire them in or we build them. Mm-hmm. We in learning and development, we are the only department that builds skills. We need to embrace that and say that, right? When you said, yes, we need to be talking about skills because that's the way things have been going. Everyone is anchoring on skills. I would submit they've always been anchoring on skills, and we've been fighting them. They're going in and saying, they're talking skills in our course request meetings. I need them to be able to do A, B, and C. And we're saying, okay, let me give you this subject to cover that. Instead of saying, okay, I'm going to take A, B, and C, and that's, I'm going to train exactly to that. We're going to track against that. We're going to measure against that. And we're going to use the same measurements that you expect on the job in my learning. So this is not rocket science, nor is it new. It is, I don't really know how we got to where we are, except for the fact that we didn't embrace our own science. Our own science is that we can, identify what has to come out of a course, give those skills, give them the practice and what they need to do those skills, and then be able to change the trajectory of what they do in their job. But we've not done that. So it's really within our purview to do this easily. And we've heard, over the years, bits and pieces of talk the language of the business, that those little phrases that come up. Well, crap, let's just stop making these little phrases and let's just say, what skills do you need? these are the skills I'm addressing in my course. You recognize what those skills are. I can show you whether those skills were achieved, and then I can show you whether they were applied. And that is the data. Then when somebody says, what are you getting out of learning? I say, these are the skills we added to the organization and were applied on the job. And that's why that metric's changing.
Mm. Well, I think there's an important thing to address here, Laura, because everybody who's been to school, college, or on a training course previously thinks they know how to do learning and development. You know, and I think that this is crucial in relation to what we're talking about here, because you mentioned earlier, Laura, that data is everywhere, and quite rightly, that organizations have never been more data savvy or data curious. But I'd love to know from you then, what are the keys to both analysis so that we understand the problems and informing learning design? And especially, and I suppose this draws us back to what we were just talking about, especially when our stakeholders know what they want and they'll tell us what they want in the training course that they've already sold to their teams.
Okay. So, you know, it's a vicious cycle. And it's a vicious cycle we put ourselves into. So let me just say up front, we're going to have to break that cycle. Mm-hmm. And the only way to break that cycle, in my view, is by measuring and using the data from those measurements to have the conversation change. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's just use this envision this example. You go in, you know, it all starts with somebody needing something in their business unit, right? I'm in sales and I need my salespeople to be able to create leads, whatever it is, right? When we go in, let me back up just a little bit. What we have learned over these years of doing this, and we've been doing this a long time, honestly, we have to start with the learning department and shift their mindset. It's just what you said, David. We have to spend concentrated time on helping them understand what they do, what their value is, because otherwise they just, well, yeah, all that's nice, but I'm going to just keep producing my courses and going there. We have to shift them. You're a part of the business. You are your business. Here's the business acumen you need to use in these conversations. We have to treat them as if they are a part of the business, not just an external part of delivering courses. So once we kind of shift their mind to open it up to say, oh, wait a minute, I can have a different conversation, they have to start there. Then they go in and they actually have a different conversation and they say, okay, What things are they doing? What things do they need to be doing? Then let's narrow those down to what problems do they need to solve? What decisions do they need to make? What observable behaviors do they need to have? Those are the critical thinking skills or observable behaviors. Mm-hmm. We're thinking in those terms when we're gathering the information from them. If they are forcing this course on us, well, first thing, we've shot ourselves in the foot many times, because many times they'll go in and say, well, they need selling skills. Mm-hmm. And then we say, well, we don't have time to make that. So we go to a vendor who gives us some general selling skills, and then we give them back to them, and the cycle continues. Mm-hmm. We stop that cycle. And we say, wait a minute, this is our organization, and this is our selling people, and these are the specifics that you need, and these are the standards that you're using, and you're telling me they're not doing those. I know how to create these skills. I'm going to make a course. I'm going to identify those specific skills. I'm going to measure them against their ability to do that to the level you say they need to be doing it. And once I've done that, then I have a mechanism to identify that skill in the organization everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, David, when I run that, let's just say I run 20 people in that course. I run those 20 people in the course. I've got these five skills. I've got measurements for those five skills. They come in. I can make an assessment up front. Do they already have that skill? Mm. If I find out that they already have that skill, then I have the business intelligence to go to that stakeholder and say, wait a minute, you've told me you've got this metric that's messed up and you think these are the behaviors that they need, but I'm telling you these behaviors are already in these people. So that's not what's messing this metric. Let's start this conversation again. Mm. Without that data, I could never have that conversation, right? But because of the specificity in the way I've designed, I can see what skills they are, I can measure against them, and I can test those people, right? Mm. So then if I move on and say, okay, they don't have this skill, then I can take that same assessment at the end of the class and verify that they got that skill. Mm. And that's very easy to do. You know, I don't pull in, you know, here's ABC, tell me ABC. That's not a measurement. That is, I need you to be able to pitch this product to this customer in these circumstances and have them do the job in the classroom, basically, right? Mm. And then I do that and I can verify that they've met those standards. If one or two people fail, that might be some competency issue, right? But if everybody has challenges in learning, then that is a problem with my design or my facilitation. So that informs me that the methods I'm using are incorrect. Mm. And I need to stop the process then and fix them, right? That is the holy grail, if you will, because that tells us what we're doing is actually creating the change and what we're doing that might need to be improved to create the change. Mm. So basically, if you collect the data on those things, David, then you get both information on how the learners go through the process, but actually you're able to measure the process. So if everybody learns it, they get the skills, and I'm having a conversation with that manager and say, look, now they've got those skills. And then later on, I have the ability to look for those skills again. Mm-hmm. And if I look for those skills again, 2 months after on the job, and they're not doing those skills, then what does that tell me? That tells me that my learning's perfect. I've done what I need to do, but the organization readiness for that is not there.
Yeah.
I tried to mitigate that in my first conversation, right? And because we've had agreement on what's coming out, and we're not using terms of objectives and all that. We're using terms of skills. These are five skills we're tracking, right? You told me these are the ones, you gave me the standards. We're working on that. But on the back end, if they're not doing it, I have the mechanism, I have the data to tell me. If they're not doing it, then my conversation is with that manager to say, hey, this is not happening. What can we do to mitigate this so that the skills can be used? Because this metric's never going to change. If mm. just because I taught them in class, unless they do it here, this metric's never going to change. Our job is being able to communicate that to our leaders, that mm. we have the data on that process as it goes through, and that that data informs us, and that those are actionable things.
Mm.
That was a long explanation, but did it resonate?
Yeah, completely. I mean, okay. Really, this sets some fireworks off in my mind. What I love that, just to touch on one of the things you just explored at the end there, Laura, was that we don't have to communicate to our organizations that we do something differently as a result. You're saying there that we don't, we need to communicate to our leaders, but we don't need to send out a communication saying that when you ask for training, we do this instead. It's a one-by-one conversation with every individual leader based on our listening and holding ourselves to account to making the introducing a solution that meets their desired outcomes, recognizing as well that there'll be other departments who face the frustrations that we do, that people don't understand them. But when somebody goes to finance or accounting and says, I need a whole lot more in my budget, they don't say, okay, brilliant, when would you like it? Yeah. There's a rigor behind it. And when somebody thinks they've got a brilliant idea for marketing that they pitch to them, marketing are generally going to say, well, we took a look at that and there are no SEO searches for that, so they will push back to what are very well-intended, but perhaps not skilled professionals in their field. So, but too quickly, we think that our role is to plug gaps in our curriculum or in our content libraries, and we feel that, and because we believe that engagement, completion, and satisfaction are primary measures of our success. Of mm. course, yes, sir. Yes, sir. How many would you like?
Exactly.
So it seems like a reasonable response. But what I love about what you said there, Laura, and you almost held it back, was that the key to measuring the skills is understanding what people are in the organization to achieve. And there will be a certain level of expectation of how the work is done, but ultimately the reason that they are in the job at all, where again, when you're in the business of providing learning and you've got let's have a think, a course on presentation skills rather than something that's going to help people to pitch their ideas mm-hmm. to internal senior stakeholders, then mm-hmm. yeah, it doesn't matter if you do a presentation about your dog that lasts 5 minutes and everybody claps at the end. Mm-hmm. That's not a skill that's valuable in the organization, but the ability to pitch to internal senior stakeholders and gain support for your ideas in a particular field actually is. And you will be able to demonstrate that you have the capability or you don't, or you have enough, but there is room for improvement. Again, it's like learning and development, and Guy Wallace talks about this, learning and development out of context looks almost nonsensical, and the metrics are certainly irrelevant. But learning and development in context, in the context in which people are expected to perform and get results, makes an enormous amount of sense and is faster, cheaper, easier, and less risky than the alternative.
Exactly, and much more targeted.
Yeah.
So every time we go to a vendor and get some general course, then we are shooting ourselves in the foot, because we're basically saying there's no skill to what we're doing. We can just go hire somebody and this course will do it. Yeah. We're not business partners. Mm. And going back to that scenario, if we did not have the data on the skills and they asked for this course and we went in and we said, okay, here, and we gave the course. And then later on, nobody's the wiser as to what we actually added to the organization, because there has been no transparency as to whether or not we were able to achieve anything through that course. It would simply go repeat the course. If things didn't change, repeat the course without understanding. The thing that bothers me, David, is how on earth did our industry get to the point where we don't even understand which skills we're providing in our courses, and we don't have the data that shows that. We don't have when you go back and you look at a course and you know, you might get a survey that says, I liked it, or I didn't like it, or you should do this, or you should do that. You're following, you know, somebody's personal opinion about what you should do in your course, instead of you as a designer saying, wait a minute, I taught it this way, and they didn't get to that point where the level I needed to, I'm teaching it this way. Now I need to teach it another way. Because I know what the skill is, the skill in the business, and I know the level it needs to be in. That's where I work my magic. Mm. How did we totally skip over that? I don't know. Because the science is there. We know how to create objectives that cover the condition of the job and the criteria of the job. The thing you and I are both saying, I see we're in similar lanes, but speaking in a different way. You're just trying to get people to understand they are a steward of the business, and it needs to be the business things that we're doing. I'm trying to do that, but I'm also trying to show you how to do that and to show you, if you don't do that, the data that you're completely missing, there's no way they're going to give us credibility unless we can show that our methods work, and we can show them how we are the stewards of the business, ensuring that every course that we give is teaching somebody to do their job specifically, right? Because, you know, if you don't do it specifically and align with that manager, then how's the manager going to, how are they going to run their business? They're using, I've seen total times where, because we serve the individual business units, so we need to know their business. I've seen where we have given out courses where, you know, generally across all these different business units, it's the same course and they all use it differently. So you leave it up to the individual person to decide how they're going to use it, so they don't get near as much out of it. And then this, or we use completely different standards than what they're using on the job. How the heck are we business partners and able to make enact a change when we're doing that? I mean, we know this. We just don't do it.
No. But I wonder whether we need to look at this from the other side, Laura, because perhaps one of the reasons we don't do this is because it's difficult to do at enterprise-wide scale. We are small learning and development teams with large client groups across multiple geographies. And part of the reason we're small teams is that a lot of us can't prove our impact for all the reasons we've talked about before. But I wonder how we do this at enterprise scale, Laura.
That's an easy one. I know it doesn't seem easy, but let me just try to explain this. I'm not the best at articulating. It's all in my head really clear. I'll do my best. Every day we go in, we get course meetings. This is part of our job, right? We get course meetings, we design our course, we develop them, we deploy them, right? That's our process. To do this enterprise way is we do that process, we just do that process better. So what we have found is, and of course, obviously we've been doing this for a lot of years, so we've got, you know, solid means of doing this. But essentially, part of the process we use, which is the only thing that's different in what than what I just described. Right now, we get the requirements from the learning people. We create the course. We deploy the course. We do all that, right? And the cycle continues. The only thing that we have done differently is instead of before we go and develop the course, we sit down and create a blueprint for outcomes of that course. And those blueprint for outcomes includes the critical thinking skills, like the decision-making, problem solving, the job critical thinking, right? And the observable behaviors that they need. And then we target those specifically and we make basically a blueprint that says, here's the skills, here's my corresponding assessment, and this is the way I'm going to teach it, so that we have a blueprint for success, if you will. So outside of most people do that. They storyboard as they go and they just kind of put content in and they do that all there in their head. The only difference doing this enterprise would be that you would have your team put in that little extra step of saying, well, big extra step, important extra step of saying, what are my outcomes for my business here? Let me get that straight. And then I design my course. And they use best practices in design to do that. You know, they have objectives that are not like, I'm going to learn Excel or whatever. They have specific in when I'm doing this piece of my job, I do these tables in Excel for this particular task that I need to do. It's not that it's difficult to do enterprise, David. It's because all it is doing the process we currently do better, essentially. The difficult part is shifting our mindset to, because we've been beaten down, more and more courses and more and more courses and more. So we've gotten, not only have we been beaten down and so we're just doing the best we can with the time that we have, but we've also lost the attention of our leaders. And our leaders are not strong enough to go in and say, wait a minute, Mr. VP, whatever you are, pulls my strings. I'm going to tell you, this is what I'm going to do to make sure that I get the data that I need in order to serve what you're asking me to do. We're afraid to do that because we don't, you know what I'm saying? We don't, that's a ground we've never crossed before. We've only just given this, here's a number of courses, and that's what they're asking for. Sometimes they're frustrated with asking just for that, but they don't know what they can get. But I will tell you, there are a lot of companies out there starting to do this. So if you don't get to where you know how to do it, then that CEO is going to find out about somebody else that gives them much better data than you got. You might be thinking about it.
Yeah. And I think that the key to it, Laura, is that in those initial conversations with your stakeholder, and they might be your HRD, it might be your HR business partners and their client groups, it could be a senior stakeholder or middle manager. If when you are talking about what the consequences of not doing anything are, or what the desired outcome needs to be, you'll find out there and then whether they want a dance done. And what I mean by that is any old training will do, or whether they want change. And if they want change, they'll listen. And I know that in my time in leading L&D teams, when it came to actual change and it was at scale, there was absolutely no reluctance in trusting me and getting the analysis done. And however we determined, and it was always a partnership with the leader, with their HR business partner, whoever needed to be involved in supporting the change, however that needed to be done, it was done. And I know that we did this with mini accelerated apprenticeships, buddying systems, mentoring, in order to make sure that people were equipped with what they needed in order to perform. No one ever curated a learning path of generic content and said, if when you've finished all that, you'll be able to do the new job. Never. That was never, ever done, because when the stakes are high, we can't rely on the vast suite of content or programs that we already have. The analysis is required in order to build something bespoke and actually hold ourselves accountable to the desired outcome.
We can't hold ourselves to a desired outcome unless we align our outcome with what can actually be achieved, right?
Yeah, that's
so right. So if we mirror the job in our courses, then we have a much better, that's the only way we can actually say that that, you know, we hit the mark, number one, but that's the only thing we can measure against, except the knowledge that I know how to relieve my stress when I'm at home or whatever that course was, right? Something you said, though, struck me. You said that, you know, you talked with them and you identified what they needed on the job, and they respected enough of what you did to know that you would get them there. In addition to what you did is not just provide the learning course, but also anything else additional you may need in order to get it assimilated onto the job, support on the job, reference, you know, mentorship or whatever, which is a part of our job. But we can't highlight what that is until we can say the course gets them this far.
Yep.
And then we need them over here to do this. And that's all a partnership about the job. So ultimately, if we do our job better, the way we're talking about now, the way we just described, then our business units have a partner that says, if I need additional skills, I can trust these people are going to be able to show me that those skills were added and what I need to do to ensure they're assimilated and to further. We're the performance experts. Right? We have tended to skip over this piece of, I can tell you what skills I've actually added to you and how to measure those and align those with the business. And we've gone into, okay, I don't know, because nobody knows, David, unless you have listed your objectives in these formats and measured against them, you don't know that they're actually able to do it. You know, they completed the course, you know, they liked the course, you know, that they think it was good, right? But when you come over here and then you start adding in things like mentorship and all that, unless you have this information, you don't know whether you're creating the change here or whether you created it in your course. So why are we skipping this piece? Because this black box, this course is this black box. We've totally skipped over that and tried to do all of these other things to meet the needs of our organization.
Drawn towards creating the shiny solution rather than spending the time understanding the success measures at the outset that could determine the shortest distance between current performance and required or desired performance in a way that perhaps, you know, in the past we might have just, you know, thrown content a day upon day upon day.
And I would submit that we're plugging our own holes, right? If we don't know what we've actually achieved in this course as far as bringing the skill forward, then, and we go and we do all of this, then we're plugging our own holes because we don't know whether we created the skill here. We might be teaching them here when we're mentoring and doing all that on the job. It fascinates me, just totally fascinates me that we don't want to know this information. Well, we do now. It's a lot of people do now. But when all this conversation goes around this black box, when nobody, the data we need is right there in our design. If I design for these five skills, the data on whether I added those five skills and where the organization sits on those five skills is always open to me and my leaders. So if my leaders say my new strategy is for us to be able to corner this part of the market, and in order to corner this part of the market, we need to be experts in X. The only way for me to, if I do that, and they say, come to learning, say, I need this capability in X, I need to be able to show them that X was added. And I need to be able to show them that I can test wherever X is in the organization. I can't just say, oh, here's the course on the subject, because that doesn't tell them that that's actually added. You see what I'm saying? We're hiding our work without using this data.
Well, we can see now from this conversation why data is one of the biggest growth areas in learning and development right now. But as we look to close off the conversation, and if the listener realizes now's the time to raise their game with data and take the opportunities that you've described, how should they begin?
The best place for them to begin is in standardization of their design. There's a couple places. One is to shift the mindset of their people, to let them understand that they are part of the business. They're there to solve a business problem. They're not there to create a course, right? And that will help them to be able to have better conversations and be able to pull out those skills. But when they pull out those skills and they design that course, they need to design that course so that they know, identify the skills, have corresponding assessments, and they collect that data. If they collect that data, it will inform them on whether or not their intervention was successful, and it will inform the organization about our value. Because no one else creates skills other than us, but if you ask anybody anywhere what learning department does, they say they create courses. when I go and I speak to groups, I say, well, where's your product? What do you do? Well, they don't even say our course. They say we help the organization. Mm-hmm. So we're very confused as to what we do. The bottom line is we create skills for the organization. That's how they need to know us immediately. They create skills. How do they do that? Through their courses. So the way they need to get started is, and you can't improve anything, David, unless you have standard design. Mm. So if everybody has these elements, they have measurable objectives, they have corresponding assessments, and they have the skills written as skills, critical thinking, problem solving, decision making, or observable behaviors that match the job. If they just do that, they're set up to be able to measure and deliver all the data we've been talking about.
Wonderful. And my final question then, Laura, if people wish to find out more, follow you, connect with you, or follow your work, best can they do so?
LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, Laura Paramore on LinkedIn. The company that I work with is called eParamus, eParamus. You can go on the website and learn a lot about the science side of what we're talking about and just really what's available out there. But follow us on LinkedIn because, you know, we're always putting information out there. We're very passionate advocators for learning and development, as I know you are, David. And I think that the tide is shifting. We have this opportunity. 2024, let's just bite the bullet and give yourself, I'll leave us with this thought. One of the things that people a lot say, they don't want to be measured. You know, I don't want to be measured. I'm worried about being measured. But as we well know, only way that we can gain confidence is if we're measured and we're successful. Mm. Then we have confidence that we know. If we're never measured, then we never know what we don't know. And we're always always insecure about that. So get the data, show your work, let people see that transparency. You'll gain the confidence that you need in your department, and then you'll be able to stand up to the senior leaders that say, show me your value.
That's the perfect way to wrap it up. Laura, thank you very much for returning and being a guest again on the Learning and Development
Podcast.
Thank you,
David. It's been pure joy.
The importance of data in L&D will only increase, and as we mature with it, we'll find more inspiration in the success stories of peers. Let's make 2024 our year of impact and see data as our way of doing so. If this conversation has whet your appetite for good quality L&D chat and you'd like to get involved, you can now join the L&D Collective, of which I'm an active member. Join me and thousands of L&D peers via the link to the L&D Collective in the show notes. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, perhaps to suggest topics you'd like to hear discussed, you can tweet me at David in Learning and connect on LinkedIn. Again, you'll find links in the show notes. And goodbye for now.